whistle while you work. Put on that grin and start right in to whistle loud and long. Just hum a merry tune.
Welcome to Company Break, a program dedicated to the companies and organizations in our local area, giving them a chance to talk about what services they can provide for you, our WCRI listeners. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Company Break. Today, it's a pleasure for me, Mike Mano, sitting in the host chair, to be introducing you to two relatively famous people on the circuit in Rhode Island. They are the co-owners of the Glass Station, which if you haven't heard about it by now, you will be hearing about it. Jennifer Nock is here. Welcome, Jennifer. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to see you. And Eben Horton. Eben, nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
All right. It's great to have you both with us, and we're going to find out everything we want to know about the Glass Station. And in particular, this is an important day, June 4th, where your Glass Float Project, is that the name, the correct name?
Yes.
That gets underway today.
Yep.
And the Glass Float Project is kind of a hide-and-seek game.
Sure. Or a scavenger hunt, or just a long walk.
It's an opportunity for people on Block Island, and that's the only place, right? Just
right.
Block Island.
Correct.
Where there have been some hidden glass, what are they called, orbs or?
Technically, they're floats.
Floats.
Fashioned after a Japanese fishing net float.
A fishing
but
net float.
A lot of people call them orbs. So,
okay.
So whatever you want it to be.
We go with it.
Whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
And they're placed around Block Island, and people have been searching for them for years. This has been going on now for how many years, roughly?
11 years.
11 years. That's pretty roughly. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's find out more about you as individuals and how this all got started, because I want to find more about the Glass Float Project, which starts officially today out on Block Island. And Jennifer, let's start with you. Did you grow up in the Rhode Island area, or are you from somewhere else?
I am from somewhere else.
All
I'm
right,
a transplant.
That's enough with you. Okay, let's go to... No, I'm kidding. Tell
she
us.
She isn't a Yankees fan, though. So.
Whereabouts did you grow up?
So I was born in Colorado, grew up mostly in Ohio, and then went back to Colorado after school. But I've been here in Rhode Island now for 8 years.
Yeah.
8 years.
8 years in Rhode Island. But when you say went to school, did you go to school for something artistic, or was it completely a different area?
Completely different.
Okay, as most people do.
Yes. I studied English literature, and I was going to be an English professor, and then decided I wanted to be a glassblower instead.
And that just came to you one day?
No. Well, first I figured out that I didn't want to be an English professor. And then figuring out that I did want to blow glass came a little bit later.
Okay. And how did that happen? That's not like someone, I heard my mother playing the piano and I want to play the piano. Or did it? Maybe you do have a relative in the business.
Nope. No relatives in the business. So when I left graduate school, I was in Texas. I moved up to the mountains of Colorado, sort of returning to the place of my birth, and met some people up there who worked in a glassblowing studio. And I needed a job. I started working in the gallery and then was managing the gallery and just couldn't see what was going on in that studio for 8 hours a day and not want to be a part of what was going on in there. So I just kind of asked the owner to show me. And he let me, and I had a knack for it, and that was about 20 years ago.
Wow. That's amazing. And it just it started as simple as that, and now you're following your wife's passion.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I was in the right place at the right time, that's for sure.
All right. And for people that want to check this out, the Glass Station does have a very nice website. It's pretty easy to remember. Eben, what is the actual address of the station, of the website?
Theglassstationstudio.com.
Theglassstationstudio.com.
I hope it is.
Okay.
Yes. Right?
Okay. That's correct.
Right. Now they're checking with each other to make sure, because like a lot of people, they don't go to their own website, of course. But, Eben, let's go back to you and find out a little bit about your beginnings and how this started up. You're a New Englander?
Yeah. Yep. I grew up in Newport.
In Newport. Okay. And at what point in time did glassblowing enter your life?
I first tried it when I was about 9 years old. I went to Thames Glass in Newport for a make your own ornament class and thought it was really interesting, but it didn't change my life or anything. But then when I was 15, I heard they were looking for someone for like an after school job apprenticeship. And because I'd already done it, I thought, well, yeah, that was really neat. So I went in there and asked, and they said I was too young. And I kind of asked again, and they said no. And then
persistence, I think, is coming up here.
Yeah. They knew I was a sailor, and the owner had a sailboat. He would race on Wednesday nights on his boat, and he needed crew. So he said, well, I need crew, so how about we work something out? You know, if you crew for me, I'll hire you. I was 15, and worked there after school, and just slowly learned a little bit and a little bit and a little bit. And then I went to college for it, to the School for American Crafts, which is part of RIT in Rochester, New York. And then started the glass station in 2000.
And where was it located at that point?
On the corner of Main Street. Well, actually, when I first started my own studio, it was in Providence, just for like half a year, and realized that I made a mistake. I was not in a public area, and I found a little gas station on Main Street in Wakefield, and I thought, well, if it's a gas station, I should call it the glass station. So that's where it all started. It all started in a gas station, and then we moved up to a car dealership. So where we are now used to be a Ford dealership in the 60s.
Still in Wakefield?
Still in Wakefield, just down the street, next to the Muse Tavern.
Okay. And so easy to find if you're in the downtown Wakefield area, right on Main Street.
Right.
Okay. Look for the big windows in the front.
Big windows.
Yes.
Right. That's
a lot of glass.
Exactly. Lots of glass behind lots of glass.
All right. So now we have your individual stories. And at some point in time, Colorado has to meet Rhode Island.
Yes.
And how did that happen?
So we actually met at a trade show in Philadelphia in 2011. It was Eben's like 15th time being there or something like that. And it was my first time being there. I was pretty new to the wholesale show business.
Right. It's a gift show type thing?
Yeah. Well, it was a craft show. So it was all types of American craft, all mediums.
But the buyers would pretty much be gift shop owners.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Shops and gallery owners. Mm-hmm. So we met on the loading dock on the first day. And, since I was new to it, it was nice to have somebody who kind of knew the ropes and who knew Philadelphia. And we became friends. And
there's a hesitation here.
Yeah, there's a hesitation. Because, there's so many details, but which details do you want to include? So our first date was actually a group date, and we went to a brewery in Philadelphia, and Edmund hit a French fry in his beard.
Yes.
Trademark, and pulled it out later.
Now, see, that's one I've not heard of. I've heard, hi, you look nice, or haven't we met before? But I've never heard the hiding French fry in the beard trick.
Yes. Well, it might have been the beer, but it might not have been the beer because I thought it was hilarious.
Okay.
And it worked. We became
I didn't became offer friends. To share the French fry, though.
Yeah, you did not share the fry.
Red flag. He's not.
There you go.
Not sharing.
So, and it's been together ever since. And
Pretty much. We were just friends for a summer, communicating now and then. And then I came out here to visit him for the first time in October of 2011. And pretty much ever since then, we've been together.
Okay, so October of 2011, and the glass station has been certainly very successful since then. And I must say that people that haven't heard of you are probably living under a rock somewhere, because you have had more than your average share of publicity on national news and local news and things like that, things like CBS This Morning, Sunday Morning,
yep.
PBS, This Old House, on and on. There's been lots of different things, probably because of the uniqueness of what you do and obviously a tribute to your individual charisma for both of you that, it, you know, people want to pay attention and want to find out more about you. So that's I guess that's good news. That's lucky, yeah. Right?
I think it's good news.
Yeah.
I never tried for it to happen that way. It just happened.
Well, if you're going to be hiding the French fries, then things like that happen to you. You
right. Maybe the French fry is what was the spark for the Glasslow project.
There you go.
Hiding fries, hiding clothes.
Who knows?
So it sounds like a very interesting business. And let's just talk briefly before we take a break about the fact that the website has some pictures of some of the items that you've created. They're available for sale on the website. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So we have a pretty extensive website. It showcases pretty much everything that we sell in the shop, which is hand-blown glass by Eben and I and our team of employees. And then we also have some work by other artists as well. So it started out just with our friends who were helping us by giving us some work to fill up our gallery. Mm-hmm. And the collection has really evolved over the years. So we have a really great collection and great diversity of work from American glassblowers, American and Canadian, actually, in our gallery. So I think we have the work of maybe 14 other artists right now, as well as some jewelry, both glass jewelry, sterling silver, and a little bit of fine jewelry as well.
And this is all on display in what used to be the Ford car dealership, right?
We did a lot of work to make it look more like a gallery and less like a car dealership.
I think
car
if people
dealership.
Go to the website and they see the picture, they'll know it doesn't look like a Ford dealership.
A lot of people remember it as Napa.
Yeah.
It was Napa Auto Parts for
the locals
about 20
remembers,
years.
You know, it's what used to be.
Yeah.
Right down just past where the Bennies used to be or whatever. However, in Rhode Island language.
Yeah. And exactly.
Jennifer, have you picked up on Rhode Island language since you've been here?
Yeah, I have.
Have you ever been to Cranston?
I've been to Cranston, but you have to go north of the Tawa.
I call it Cranhattan.
All right. Well, I want to get particular about how this at all works and about the glass float project that's going on, but we're going to take a short break and we'll be back with more with Jennifer and Eben from the Glass Station. The Glass Station is the subject of today's Company Break. I'm Mike Mano, and sitting with Jennifer Nock and Eben Horton, the co-owners of the Glass Station in Wakefield. Wakefield is the location of their retail establishment, but their fame is spread far and wide. And specifically, a lot of the fame goes out to Block Island, where there's a thing called the Glass Float Project. Is that correct terminology?
Yep.
Now, let's find out how that all started and why. Who wants to take that?
I guess I should.
Okay, go
ahead. I could start it. So I first hid glass when I was 19 on the beaches of Little Compton and Newport. It was all glass that was sort of defective from where I was working. They wanted to throw it away. And I thought, we can't throw this away. Like, let's make some people happy with this. So I filled up a backpack and just peppered some beaches with the stuff. I never knew if anybody found them. I know they found them, but I didn't really care about sticking around to see.
Right. You didn't watch.
No.
To see if they found
no,
them. You just put them there. And yeah.
I would think if I sat there and watched, it was more for me, and it wasn't for me at all.
Cool.
But then when the Great Recession happened, 2008-10, maybe even into 11, things were pretty slow at my studio, and I wanted to do a public art project that would keep me occupied. It was more just about doing something fun, and I thought I would revisit that, the hiding of the glass. So
you just had to find a place to hide it, right?
Right, and I've been going to Block Island all my life, and I just thought, you know, I should do it out there. It's a really beautiful place. It would give me an excuse to go out there more.
Mm-hmm.
at the time I was fishing a lot, and I thought I could go out there and go surf casting and hide floats at the same time, which I've never once done. It's too much work. Maybe one day.
The fishing too much work or the hiding thing?
Both.
Right. There
Both.
You go.
Yeah.
So now when you started, first hid them on Block Island, was there 10 of them, 50 of them, 20 of them?
There was 150.
150?
150.
So now these are all something that you made.
Yes.
Yourself, and then are they marked in any way?
Yes. They're all numbered with a little Dremel, with a little diamond bit, just handwritten, numbered and dated. And there could, I know there are still some from that first year that were never found.
Wow.
I always say that archaeologists might find some.
Well, that would be cool. And now I have one in my hand. I'm going to hold it up to the microphone so everyone at home can see it.
they can hear it.
Hear it. But this has got a little stamp on the bottom. It looks almost like, I'm sure people have said this to you before, like a shaking snow globe without the snow and nothing inside it. But it's about the size of a little bit smaller than a baseball. Right. Are they all about the same size?
They vary.
They vary?
Some we make a little smaller, mm-hmm. which are great for hiding because they're easier to hide.
Okay. And this one has the impression of the symbol of Block Island, the actual shape of the island on the bottom of it. Right. They all have that too?
Yes. Since the very beginning, there was a Block Island. But after the fourth year, I realized that I needed to get the name Glass Float Project on there because not everyone knows what it is. So if they pick one up, they can see the website address, glassfloatproject.com.
Okay.
That's and somewhat legible on it.
Is it still 150 that you hide?
Now it's a 550.
550?
Yeah.
Now, I have no, since I'm not a glass blower and don't have a lot of experience, does it take you 10 minutes, 2 hours? How long to make one?
It takes a long time to learn how to make them. So the old saying is it takes me 30 years and 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. they take about 5 minutes to make one.
Oh, all right. So, I mean, because I'm thinking 500 of them, if it takes you half an hour, then you get a lot of time involved there.
Right. But then there's more hidden times of making the actual glass and melting that glass and annealing it after you make it so it can cool down slowly. Then we have to number them and date them and hide them. So there's a lot of time that goes into each
one. Sure. That's amazing. And to what end? Is this strictly for you to just say, I did this, or is there...
It started like that. I thought I would do it for a year or two as sort of to not put my name on the map, but like have a little historical register of... I love the island's really quirky history. You know, you'll talk to an islander and they say, you remember that time that guy came out here and did some weird thing? And they go, oh, yeah, I remember that. And I thought, well, I want to be one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But what I didn't realize was how popular it would become. And now I'm sort of not trapped or stuck.
I was going to say, you're stuck now, right?
I'm not stuck. I can always stop if I want. But there's definite pressure and obligations, like... There are a lot of people that haven't found one that really would like to find one. So if
I'd like to find one, when I'm out there in a few weeks, I'm going to start looking.
Well, I won't stop between now and then.
All right. So that's good. So today's the official first day.
Yes.
And so 550 of them are out there somewhere now, right?
Nope. There'll be a large handful hidden today.
Oh, okay.
And then it's a trickle throughout the whole summer.
So you keep going back. This isn't something you do all at once.
Correct. If we did it all at once, they'd all be found quickly, or most would be found quickly. And then if you went out later in the summer, you wouldn't have as much chances. So what I realized after the first year was I had to break it up and hide them in batches. So batches are hidden up until Columbus Day weekend.
Okay. Now, you won't find one of these on the ferry boat, right? Oh, will you?
You could.
Yeah, really?
Once or twice, they've been found on the ferry.
Really? Okay.
So the barf bag bucket.
There's no rules then, right? There's no rules. You could find them at Ballard's Beach, or you could find them at Champlin's, or you could find...
There are rules.
There are rules, yeah.
I always say I will hide them in a public place, so I won't hide it in someone's yard. So
right.
If you are hunting, like, don't go
in your
into
own
people's
yard.
Yards right. Yeah. Or... think, oh, that yard looks pretty neat. Let's go in there and start taking apart their stone wall. No.
But they'll be near the north light. They could be near the southeast light.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Mostly on the Greenway trails.
Okay. Yeah.
Or in the barf bucket. on the ferry, there's like this wooden box where they have all the barf bags. And I've hidden a couple in there. I felt if someone's looking in there, they're desperate. They're desperate. They need something. So.
All right. And the one I'm holding here is clear. Are they all clear?
No, for the year, so this is 2022, there's 22 colored ones. Next year, there'll be 23.
Oh. So out of the 550, there's only 22 colored ones.
Right.
So those are the real finds.
Those are the real finds. And then number one is always a very special one. So the first year of the pandemic, we made a coronavirus float. And I thought that was a one-year thing, but it's still kind of happening. But it was just for that one year.
Yeah.
Now, Jennifer, do you go out to the island also and hide some?
I do.
You do. This is a team effort.
It's a team effort, and it's actually larger than just the team of two as well. We've got some volunteers out on the island who help us as well.
Okay.
Because, you know, we're running a business on the mainland, too. It's not always possible for us to be out there.
Right?
Exactly.
You
yeah. Yes, exactly. So, we've got some great volunteers out there. So with their help, a few are actually being hidden pretty much every day during the summer. So no matter what time or what day people go out there, there is a chance that they can find one that nobody else has seen yet.
Now, the people that are hiding them, they're like in the witness protection program, so people don't
basically
know who they are. Yeah. So that, you know, you can't be bugged and say.
I say it's like Al-Qaeda.
Why is that?
They're little cells where no one knows what the cell is or who's this. Like, it's all connected, but they don't really know. There's friends out there that don't know that their friends hide them.
Yeah.
Wow. And very intriguing.
It makes it fun. It's like a wild game.
And no digging is involved, or is there?
Nope.
No digging.
Yeah. So you're never going to find them in ecologically sensitive areas either. We don't want the project to do any harm to the island.
Right.
So you won't find them in the dunes. You know, you won't have to like pick apart the bluffs to find them.
Right.
They're always going to be above the mean high tide line on the beaches. So that way they're also not being washed away into the ocean, although every now and then it happens. One was actually found on Cuddy Hunk a few years ago.
That could have been someone that put it in the water, though.
Possibly,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Like us.
This one of the things that people might be imagining if they've never seen one, I had never seen one until today, is this is a pretty sturdy thing. This is not the kind of thing that is like a Christmas ornament, although
right.
It's about that size, but it's not that fragile. So
I say that I'd like to compare it to a Coke bottle.
Okay.
Yeah, we want
make
them.
Make them as thick as a Coke bottle is my goal when I make them.
Yeah, since they're out there in the wild, they have to be a little bit sturdier than an ornament.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I don't want people to think that, I'm walking along, I could step on one and break it. If you step on one, you probably roll your ankle before you bump the ball.
Exactly.
But it's amazing. It's a great thought and a great thing for people of the island to be doing this. Let's turn to a little bit more about what's in your shop.
Mm-hmm.
And what's there and what people can see when they go to Wakefield. It's a destination place. I can see people saying, hey, let's go down to the glass station today, versus your average gift shop where people might, you know, just happen to stroll by and walk in. I'm sure you get some of that traffic too, but it does seem to me like a place to go and check things out. What can people expect as they walk in the door? What's your first impression, if you will?
Wow. I think that's most people's first impressions.
Right. And it's because of various kinds of things that are there?
Yeah, there's just a wide variety of work. And glass is such a special medium, too. You know, it's all about color and light and transparency and the way the glass interacts with natural light or with artificial light as well. They can also see us blowing glass. So we have our studio.
That was going to be my next question. You can watch.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So our studio is attached to the gallery as well. And on any given day, at least between 10 and 4, we're in there blowing glass. Might be Eben and I, and it might be members of our team, but people are always welcome to watch. Sometimes we might be doing something that takes a lot of concentration, and then they might have to watch through the windows of the doors. But it's an interesting place where you can see a craft that's almost 2,000 years old happening right before your eyes. And it's pretty intense. There's 2,000-degree furnaces, and it's a little bit loud, and it's definitely hot and pretty exciting.
I would think there's a large part of the population that's never witnessed this. So it's not something that's on every street corner. It's not like Dunkin' Donuts or something like that where there's one everywhere.
Yeah.
Do you have any clue? Are there 4 in Rhode Island? 20? Any idea of how many other people are doing this in the general area?
I think there's about 6 or 7 glass studios in the
entire area.
Yeah.
So it's pretty well spread out. It's not something
most of them are not public.
Mm-hmm.
They're just private
public
studios, and they're making glass to send out to galleries or something.
Now, can someone call or visit your shop and order something special or commission work?
That depends.
Okay.
it depends on a lot of things, too. We can't make everything that people can just dream up.
Yeah.
And it also depends on how busy we are with other kinds of work at the moment.
But if someone had $1 million, you could probably do something for them.
We might be able to help them out.
Okay. Yeah. That's not the focus of your work. It's not to come in and say, oh, my aunt always loved daylilies. Can you make me a daylily?
Right. Yeah. That's a little bit more difficult, you know. And that's why we have so many other artists present in the gallery, because glass is such a personal medium that one person's work is going to be just completely different from another person's work. And so, you know, we have what we're really good at, and our friends have what they're really good at. And we all sort of prefer making the stuff that we're really good at. A challenge is nice sometimes, but not all the time.
Right. Well, I can't thank you both enough for coming in and sharing your story with our WCRI listeners. And it's a pleasure to meet you both, as famous as you are. And I hope that I can someday find a float of my own to add to my Block Island collection of memories. And it's great. Keep up the good work. And thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Take care. And the rest of you, we'll see you next time on Company Break.
Whistle while you work.
Thank you for listening to WCRI's presentation of Company Break. I'm Mike Mano, hoping you have a great weekend.